Good morning. Today I will be talking about 3 John. It is the shortest book in the Bible, beating out 2 John by about 4 or 5 words in Greek. In English, it's about the same, actually. So just barely the shortest book. But due to its small size, I think we tend to pass it by, just give it a quick read, and just keep going. It's also near the end of the Bible, so we typically lump it with Jude and Revelation, which we tend to not like to read because they're kind of confusing. But I don't think we really give it the notice it's due, as there's plenty we can learn from it despite it's kind of small. as I mentioned for 2 John, the author is commonly thought to be John, son of Zebedee, who was one of the 12 disciples and an apostle. Who also wrote the Gospel of John and Revelation. There is some disagreement about whether John is the author of these books. There's little disagreement that it is a John that wrote the books. Most of the people that want someone other than the Apostle John to have written these want someone other than the Apostle John to have written Revelation for their own vastly complicated reasons that is not worth explaining, trust me. But it's widely accepted that the Apostle John wrote it, and its canonicity has never been majorly questioned, except for recently. Recently, people have gotten to question everything, so I'm not sure that counts. But it's been generally accepted as true from the Gospel, truly part of the Word of God, and written by the Apostle John. Unlike many of the other epistles, this book is not written to a group of people. It's not written to a church or a gathering in a home. It's not even written to one person and his church like Philemon is, where it's written specifically directed at Philemon, but it's also read in front of the church. It's rather just directed to Gaius, and no mention of it being read to anyone else or read before the church or even passed along, which is unusual for a book of a Bible. John only addresses this book to the Gaius. He doesn't address it to anyone else, as I mentioned before. There are 3 other Gaiuses mentioned in the Bible that this could be. There's Gaius of Corinth, who after his baptism by Paul, he hosts the apostles in his home, and he's thought to have lived in Thessalonica. We learn about him in 1 Corinthians and Romans 16. The second Gaius that's mentioned is Gaius of Macedonia. Or Gaius the Macedonian. We find him in Acts 19. He's linked with Aristarchus, who's a companion of Paul, and he's taken during a riot at Ephesus, and they're not able to find Paul, so they're like, hey, here are 2 other Christian dudes, let's drag them away instead. Last, we have Gaius of Derbe, who travels with Paul during his journeys through Greece. He's also thought to be the person that takes the collection for the poor out to Jerusalem. Of the people that it's thought to be, Gaius of Derbe is the most common of these 3, but it's much more likely that this Gaius is someone we haven't met before. It's none of these 3 people, but some think it that it's Gaius of Derbe. Gaius was a very popular name in ancient times, so there are a lot of Gaius in the Bible. This could very well be another Gaius. Because of that, we don't really know where this church is or where he is writing to. We don't know what area it is. John is thought to have done most of his work in Ephesus, so it's likely that this is a church near to Ephesus. It's also possible that it's one of the churches mentioned in Revelation, as that's another book John wrote, so it might be one of those 6 other churches. It's commonly thought to be Pergamum, but there's no concrete evidence for that. It's just supposition on the part of scholars. We can't learn much from Gaius from outside sources since it's not clear who he is, but the book of 3 John does give us some evidence to who Gaius is. He seems to be someone who's in a place of leadership, as he's the one that gets this letter after John can't get a letter to Diotrephes, or rather Diotrephes won't read the letter John can get to him. So he seems to be in a place of leadership. It's unclear if Gaius goes to the same church as Diotrephes does, if they're in the same church, or if they're neighboring churches. Some evidence that they're not in the same church is Diotrephes is never said to oppose Gaius, which seems like something Diotrephes would do if they were in the same church. But against that, Paul never mentions where Diotrephes is or what the church Diotrephes is at. He just refers to it as the church, which says that even if they weren't of the same church, that they were probably close together and Gaius knew well of Diotrephes. So either they were in the same church or neighboring churches. We also know that Gaius is probably a good friend to John, or someone that he knew well, as John refers to him as the beloved, which is a close personal term typically reserved for good friends. John also calls him my child, which is a common term used by Paul to refer to those that he has led to Christ. So it is likely that John is using this in the same way to say that Gaius is someone that he saved during his travels, or he led to Christ during his travels. Okay, let's dive into the elder, dive into the letter. The first thing I had to say was talking about elders, so that's where my mind went. John introduces himself as the elder, as I mentioned. He greets Gaius as the beloved, who he's very close and personal with, as we mentioned earlier. He also says that he loves him in the truth. As we know from 2 John, this is a term of Christian bond to say that I love you in the truth. It's an idea that I love you in Christ is something Paul says elsewhere. It's just I love you in the Christian bond that we share. He then prays for the well-being of Gaius. And what is of particular interest here is that he prays not only for the spiritual well-being of Gaius, but he prays for the physical well-being of Gaius as well, which is something very uncommon in the Bible. Normally, if they pray for the physical well-being of someone, the person is sick or otherwise unwell. But we have no mention of this, which seems that Gaius is in good health. He's doing fine. So this is some evidence that praying for people of good health to stay in good health is scripturally motivated. He does pray for his physical health in an interesting way, though. He says that he wants his physical health to go as well as his spiritual health does. Literally, I want you to be as well physically as you are spiritually. I don't know about you, but I don't always want that to be the case for me. Sometimes that would be fine. Sometimes that would cause some problems. So I think it speaks well of how Gaius's spiritual health is going, of his spiritual maturity, to say, I want your physical health to be as good as your spiritual health is. So I think it says well of him. But John then turns and says that he is joyful to find that Gaius is walking the truth. This is something very common for John, is he often expresses joy over finding that those that were saved are following God. He says here that it's his greatest joy. It's the greatest thing he could ever hear. The best news he could ever get is that those that he led to Christ are continuing in the way that he taught them, are continuing to go in the way that they are going. And isn't that a great thing to hear for someone like that, that he'd gone through and talked to this person and probably hadn't seen him much after that, as is the tendency that they would go through, they'd start a church and they'd maybe see them one or two other times. But to hear that good things from Gaius. As we get to the main part of the letter, there are two men that are opposed to each other. They're opposites in most principles, where one is doing one thing, the other is opposing doing that thing with all his power, where one is doing good and walking in the truth, the other is doing evil and walking in wickedness. They're presented as opposite forces from each other, and that we're to imitate one and not the other. As I mentioned earlier, it is likely that these two knew each other, as Diotrephes is not introduced to Gaius in any way. He's just mentioned as someone you know, like as if Gaius was well aware of the problem, which even if it was a neighboring church, I suspect someone who was excommunicating people based on welcoming brothers would get around fast. It's even possible that Gaius had accepted in some of the people that Diotrephes had been putting out. John starts by commending Gaius for his care of the brothers, even though they are strangers. These are people that Gaius didn't know, people that Gaius probably had never met before, but he made a habit of helping them, probably by giving them lodging. It was rare in the Old Testament Bible time, in the New Testament Bible times, for there to be inns that weren't people's houses. If there was an inn, it was just, you had extra houses and we're making money. How we'd think of renting out spare bedrooms nowadays. That was the only kind of inn you had. So it's possible that Gaius had a big house, or that he just was very open with what he had and helped people out. But often traveling speakers would be at the mercy of people in the town they were visiting to give them a house and give them food and help them along with their travels. John says also that he's not only taking them in, but he's sending them out in a manner worthy of God. It's not entirely clear what this means, but it's likely that not only was Gaius accepting them into his home, but he was also sending them off with food and some money for their travels, as was common for the day. We didn't have supermarkets on your travels as easily, so if you wanted to get to the next destination, typically between the cities, you had to have enough food for your walk to go there. And it took a long time to walk places, so it was common for the person you were staying at for them to give you food and maybe a little money if they could. So that's probably what John means by saying that he was sending them out in a manner worthy of God. I lost my place. Oh, he then talks about a little bit more about why it's so important that Gaius is doing what he's doing. He talks about the importance of Gaius accepting people in his homes, and he explains it by saying that the people went out for the sake of the name, and this is almost certainly referring to the name of Jesus, that they were missionaries spreading the gospel. So he says that these missionaries were going out and they were accepting nothing from the Gentiles or pagans. The Gentiles here refers to unbelievers. It was a very common habit for the Jews to do, as just to refer to all unbelievers as Gentiles. And he says that they were not accepting anything of Gentiles. The reason why he mentions this and why this means that they need money from other people is because speakers at that time would go out and they would give their speech, they would talk about what they wanted to talk about, and then they would take an offering from their audience. They would collect money from the people that were listening to them, and that's how they would get to their next city, that's how they would get to the next place. And this had given speakers a really bad reputation of only saying what they wanted to say for the purpose of garnering money. So John is saying that these people didn't do that. They didn't do that for the sake of the gospel, so that the gospel could be shared and probably so they could have a better reputation. But what this does mean is if you're not getting money from your audience, you have to get money and food from somewhere else. And that's why it was so important that Gaius was inviting them and helping them and being hospitable to them so that they could have a way to still get along and get fed. And he says that you're showing hospitality to these men is the way you work with them in the truth, or the way you work together in the truth. It presents this idea of brotherhood where they're working by going out and we're working by helping them go out. It's been said that there should only be two kinds of Christians. There should be senders or goers. You should either be going about with the work of the gospel, going, making it your full-time, day-to-day job to go and spread the gospel to the far reaches, where that's the only thing you do, or you should be providing for those that do. Whether you provide for those with money if you are able, or even with prayer, most missionaries I've talked to will find prayer as important as financial support, or even not more so. I've even had a lot tell me that, like, the only reason they can keep doing what they're doing on the field is because they can feel the prayers of people back at home praying for them. So never discount how important praying for missionaries can be. I'm glad that you guys as a church do plenty of that, as I can see all the nice mission stuff you have out there. That's something that is very important that we here at home, that in our Christian, well, this isn't my home, but here at, in the U.S., help those that are going out and spreading the gospel, even sometimes those that are spreading the gospel within the U.S., but are making a livelihood of it. Of course, this is not to say that we shouldn't be sharing the gospel. We should all be sharing the gospel as we are able, but most of us don't do it as a livelihood. Most of us have another job that we do on a day-to-day basis, and we share the gospel inside of that, whereas missionaries will just do that, and they don't have another way of money. And so we, as God is able, as God makes us able, should support them in any way we are able, both with giving money and praying, and also if it ever comes about that you might help them like Gaius did by saying, hey, you need a place to stay for a while, we can give you a place to stay. You need some food, you need a meal, you need some... I know a friend of mine gave a missionary their car for a month while they were home, and they said, here, I have an extra car. You can take this car and drive around the United States and bring it back. So just whatever God gives you to help other people, that you just help them as you're able. And so that's something that's really important, something that we should always keep in mind. I know that's something that I forget a lot. I get newsletters. I read the newsletters. Maybe pray for them then and say, read the newsletters, and then never think about it again. Just think about it as I see it and not really pray for them more than that. And we should honestly be praying for missionaries on a day-to-day basis, probably more often than that if we can. Paul presents the idea of praying continually, and I think part of those continual prayers should be the prayer for the work of the gospel, both here and afar. Now we are introduced to the villain of the letter, so to speak, the bad guy, the guy that's not doing what's right. Gaius's opposition, Diotrephes, or opposite, rather. We have no idea who Diotrephes is. There's no other person with a name like this in the Bible, so we really don't know. But he is someone either in a neighboring church or the same church as Gaius. He seems, from the amount of power he has, to be either a leading elder or in a high position in his church, as he has the power to kick people out of the church, which, well, he claims to have the power to kick people out of the church. Probably not biblically based, especially not for the reasons he's picking, but he at least has some power to exercise that, so it seems like he was a leading elder or something in the church, some place of authority. John starts out by telling us that Diotrephes likes to put himself first and doesn't acknowledge authority. Literally the idea that he likes to make himself as high as he can get. He wants to be well, first in his mind and first in wherever he is, and he doesn't care what anyone else has to say about it. It's his word goes and nothing else about it. He doesn't care what anyone else says to the contrary, and regardless of what anyone else says, he's going to do what he wants to do. It's also possible because of this that he forced his way into this leadership role that he has, probably pushed some soldiers and kind of squeezed his way in. But we don't really know. That's just a guess. John then says that if he comes to them, he will deal with Diotrephes and what Diotrephes has been saying out against them, that he has been speaking out against John. And John uses the word us, so it's likely that John's referring to him, either himself and a group of people with him, or himself and the other missionaries. It's very possible that he views himself as a missionary, because he did do work like that. So it's possible that he's saying, me and the other people that spread the gospel like I do, Diotrephes has been speaking out against us, and I'm going to deal with that when I come. It's also possible that John is just talking about himself and his church, but I find it more likely that it's him and a missionary group. And the reason for this, though it doesn't explicitly say it, can be guessed from the thing, is it seems that John was speaking out against these missionaries and speaking out against the brothers and not accepting them because Diotrephes didn't want to be proven wrong. He wanted to exercise this authority without anyone else being able to tell him he wasn't right. It seems like that's the reason for that Diotrephes was going to convince everyone else of his opinion, and because he didn't want John or the other missionaries to speak out what he was very honestly doing wrong, He's going to speak poorly against them and not accept people. And he goes farther than that to kick anyone out that disagrees with him. This shows us just how badly selfishness can go. And I imagine this did not start like this. I don't think Diotrephes rose to power and he was immediately like, okay, I'm a dictator, I'm kicking anyone out that disagrees with me. I imagine it was a slow fall into selfishness. So we need to be very careful for ourselves that we do not be so consumed with our own opinions, so consumed with our own selves that we're going to take out anyone else that disagrees with us and just not listen to the opinions and thoughts of others. Because I know myself, I can be very convinced of my own opinion to the point where I'll say, oh no, there couldn't, and not even consider what other people are saying. It is important that we always listen to especially what those that are over us that have more experience or authority over us have to say to us, so that we do not get consumed with ourselves and make our own little vacuum of terror, so to speak, and not accept authority. John then turns to offer counsel to Gaius, and the counsel is very simple. Don't do what the bad people are doing. Do what the good people are doing. It seems very obvious, but it's a little harder in self-practice, because we need to be careful who we imitate, because we often imitate people without trying to. We often imitate people without meaning to. So we need to be careful that we surround ourselves with people that are of good moral character, that are of upstanding moral character, and not those that are of poor moral character, because we will start to follow those you are who you hang out with kind of an idea. So we need to be careful who we surround ourselves with. Similar to that, John speaks of the man named Demetrius. We like is common with this book. We don't know who Demetrius is either. The name's not mentioned again, but it's thought to be someone who was a companion of John. It's possible that it was someone in the church, but most scholars believe that Demetrius is the person carrying this letter. It was common for New Testament writers to talk about the person carrying the letter in their book. John does it on numerous occasions, and it seems like John might be doing it here. Paul does it on numerous occasions, and it seems like John might be doing it here. That he might have actually sent this man specifically because of his good moral character. So as to speak, to give John an example and help him along with surrounding himself with good people. You need someone good to imitate Gaius? Well, here's this man Demetrius. John says Demetrius is spoken well of by everyone as well of by the truth. This is the idea of literally everyone has nothing bad to say about him, just all good things. Everything everyone hears about is good. Everything people say about him is good. The idea is from the truth can have two possible meanings. The first is that Jesus literally came and spoke as he is the truth and spoke of him. The more likely idea is that if you were to compare Demetrius to the Bible, you would get a good record. Like, this is what the Bible says to do, this is what Demetrius is doing. This is what the Bible says to do, this is what Demetrius was doing, and it would give him a good testimony from that. It also, John says after that, that if that isn't good enough, if I also can speak well of Demetrius, this probably means that John knew Demetrius and gives evidence to the fact that John probably sent out Demetrius, but he says, I also speak well of him, and you know I don't lie. You know you can trust what I'm saying. He really is giving a good report to this man, Demetrius, and he wants John to be convinced of his good moral character. John then gives his farewell after that. He says he has much to write to them, but he does not want to do so with pen and ink. If you want a random fact that will not help you at all in his life, in 2 John he uses pen and paper. And here he, in 2 John he uses paper and ink, and here he uses pen and ink. I'm not sure why that is, or why he decided to change, but it was a random fact I found that he decided to switch it up for whatever reason. There's no evidence to that. I just thought it was interesting. He says he hopes to see them soon and will talk to them face to face. This is the same as 2 John, where he wishes to meet them. He doesn't want to write long, lengthy letters. Rather, he plans to deal with them in person. He twice says, in unsure terms, that he hopes to come to them. This is probably not a, I haven't made my plans yet. This is a, I don't know if God will let me do this yet, as is common by the gospel writers, where they're like, if the Lord wills, I'll do this and that, which is how we should all be living, because honestly, we can make plans all we want, but if God doesn't want us to do it, we ain't going to do it. So it's a good example that we should go out and say, I will do this if the Lord willing, or I hope to do this if the Lord lets me, or if it's in the Lord's plans. He wishes Gaius peace. Peace be to you. This is both a common Jewish greeting, shalom, but it would also probably have special meaning to Gaius, as he is certainly in a tumultuous situation concerning Diotrephes. I said that 14 times, and this time I can't say it. So peace would probably be something significant for him. He also says, the friends send you greetings. This is probably the people of the church that John's at. Paul usually refers to them as brothers. John here refers to them as friends. You should be friends with those that are in your church. You should be friends with other Christians. And we should have a friendship because of our shared bond of truth. Jesus calls the 12 apostles, these are my friends. So there's evidence for that. It could also just mean, John could also be referring to the group he spent time with, to the group that went with him on his missionary travels, and by calling them his friends. But given the fact that he later says that guys should greet the friends that are at the church, it's probably that he's just referring to a church in general. John makes it specific that he wants Gaius to greet the friends name by name. He wants them to be greeted personally and individually. It's unclear why this is, but it's possible that John wanted this done to comfort them, to comfort those in the church of Diotrephes. I imagine that people in a church with a leader like that would become, they become afraid and they become disheartened. And so to hear, hey, John the Apostle greets you, John the Apostle knows what's going on, and he's taking care of you. He's greeting you. He sends his well wishes. Would be a comforting thing for them. So John there is giving them comfort. Okay, let's recap. So just in case we forgot, a warning against selfishness. Our selfishness will impact other people painfully, and it will impact us painfully. And we need to be careful that our selfishness is kept in check. The best way to keep our selfishness in check is to surround people of good character and to listen to those that are more experienced to us, those who have authority over us. We should be careful who we imitate. We should be careful who we are copying, what we listen to, who we spend time around, what we read, what we look at, because we will start to consume that and start to act it out. So we should be careful who and what we surround ourselves with. And this includes, in more modern time, with people you surround yourself with online, not just in person. And then, of course, the main thing of the passage is missions is important. And we who are not actively going out, though some of you may be called to actively go out, and if you do, like, by all means, follow that call and God will provide for you. You don't need to know how that's going to work. If you feel his call to go out, believe him. Like, he will take care of you, even if it's very odd and not really the way you want. But he will take care of you to do what he has set for you to do. But if we are not called to be in missions, we should be supporting those as much and as often as we are able, both with physical giving of gifts and taking care of them, but also in more easily, but hardly in the fact that we have to remember with prayer, with keeping them in our thoughts and bringing them often before God, that they may be lifted up, because prayer is important and the missionaries will feel it and it will help them in their work and they will be comforted by it. Thank you.